Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness, how we as individuals and a civilization are moving into a new sense of ourselves, a new sense of being. And there's nobody that addresses that particular situation, this particular moment in our historical development. Nobody better than tonight's guest, Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza, author of Evolve Your Brain and Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. He is going to be in New York September 12th, next week, Thursday, at the New York Center for Living, that is 247 West 36th Street in Manhattan. You can look at my website, newrealities.com, for all the information. Joe, welcome back to New Realities.
Happy to be with you, Alan.
Yes, I mean, your work keeps evolving, and I heard some amazing things, not just about the evenings, but the actual weekends that you do with people where you actually do some brain testing and you help them kind of shift from one way of being and you measure people. Can you talk about a little bit of what you do with those kind of tests in your...
Sure. It has become my passion in the last 9 months or so. And the reason that it kind of evolved to this state, Alan, is not something that I ever planned on. As a matter of fact, I never planned on any of this. One of the things that happened about a year and a half to 2 years ago, as we started getting a lot of emails from people that were explaining a lot of miraculous events that happened to them, either with their health or something in their life. And within a short amount of time, we started to see a lot of folks right during our events, right in real time, have some significant spontaneous remissions from disease. In other words, they were signaling new genes in new ways. And on some level, their mind was literally affecting their body, and that they entered into the autonomic nervous system in order to make that happen. So in one event, we had seven people that were healed of different conditions, not just like they were feeling better, but they were physically better.
But how did you know? How did you know that? What kind of system?
Excuse me?
How did you know they were actually getting better in your workshop? How do you measure that in your workshop?
Well, as an example, someone had MS and they were in a walker for the last 15 years. They came out of a meditation. A, they could feel their leg, and B, they could walk. They had both sensory and motor control over it. People with chronic pain or celiac disease or food allergies, they were noticing dramatic shifts, and then they went to their doctors and of course, took the necessary tests, and they returned back to a healthy state of being. So as a result of those events, it started to cause me to ask a question, and that is, the question was, if it's happening in real time, and if it's happening automatically, is there a way that we could measure those effects that are taking place in the brain and the body, and to be able to correlate those transformations that people were having with the new state of being? In other words, they had biological changes that were measurable. So we brought in a team of neuroscientists in an advanced workshop that we did in February of 2013. We had a little over 200 people there. And we did quantitative electroencephalographic readings, quantitative EEGs, and just regular EEGs. On about 100 of those people, we measured their brain patterns before a four-day event, and we measured their brain patterns after a four-day event. We also randomly selected different individuals during the retreat in different meditations, and we measured what was happening in their brain in real time. At the same time, we were also measuring fluctuations in the quantum field in the ambient space of the room, and we wanted to see if there were fluctuations in electromagnetism as a result of a shift in consciousness. In other words, if there's a shift in consciousness, will there be a shift in energy?
For the whole room, you're saying collectively. Is that what you're saying?
Collectively, yes, in the room. And then we also brought in a physicist from Russia who used a very sophisticated Krillian photography machine, a very advanced form of Krillian photography, to measure the energy around a person's body, as well as the energy centers of their body. And what I wanted to do was compile the information to see if we were having very real quantitative changes taking place. And after that first event in February, it was astounding because, as an example, we had 93% of the people that participated in the brain scan study had a more than 80% change in their brain for the better. That has to do with levels of coherence. That has to do with amplitude and phase synchronized patterns of brainwave activity. We also saw people experience dramatic shifts in their health, like a person with Parkinson's disease whose tremors went away. And we saw the exact change take place in the brain. In other words, after 4 days, she had a normal brain. We saw people with traumatic brain injuries or PTSD that were struggling significantly all of a sudden have their brains return back to normal. Now, the cool part about that was it wasn't them, you know, believing in or taking a pill or doing a therapy or doing some type of treatment or even receiving a placebo. They changed their body and their mind by thought alone. And so we also saw the energy of the room go from about 3,800 joules on the first day to 5,800 joules, significant constant elevation in energy, to the point where the physicist said that he had never measured that kind of change in a room before. So we knew that we were producing some measurable effects. So the concept...
Okay, can I just interrupt for 1 second? Because the key question is, what exactly were you doing with these people? I mean, lots of people do meditation. I know you focus on what people want to achieve in their lives, but can you say a little bit more specifically of what created these amazing shifts?
Well, yeah, let me... just finish one point and then we can get into that. The concept of the workshop was based on the idea of what I called information to transformation. In other words, if you take a group of people and you help them to retreat from their life, to remove the constant stimulation of the external environment that reminds them of who they think they are, they eliminate the people and the things at different times and places, and you go within. And you give them proper information to understand the biology of change and the neuroscience of transformation. And you give them the science behind the process, and then you instruct them on how to apply that process, whether it is to signal new genes in new ways or to recondition the body to a new mind or change a belief or a perception. There should be some type of transformation that occurs as a result of the process. So if there is a transformation that occurs, and we could measure that transformation, the measurement of that transformation is now more information to teach transformation better. Mm-hmm. And if we can gain the value of what we learned in measuring the transformation and apply it to teach transformation again, and we put people back in the process, and we measure that transformation again, that transformation measured becomes more information, and we begin to close the gap. And so that's what we saw happen. We saw... We learned a lot. We learned a lot of things. And we learned, for example, you can't use the brain to change the brain. You can't use the program to change the program. It's impossible to use the ego to change the ego. That, in fact, it's moving to different states of consciousness that allows that to happen. So we did a series of different meditations over a 4-day period of time. The first day was for people to metacognitively, in a mindful state, observe their past and begin to look at themselves really as the observer. So by them beginning to observe their thoughts, their behaviors, their choices, the experiences from their past, and look at them unemotionally in time, they would begin to objectify their subjective self. In other words, if you're observing those things, you can't be them any longer. So that process required enormous amounts of energy. And the first day, there was a little drop in the energy in the room. The second day was about finding the present moment, and that was moving into a place where the person got beyond themselves. They got beyond their identity, their gender, their occupation, their past. They got beyond their body, their environment, and time. And that moment, they became pure consciousness. That's the moment the brain began to start to recalibrate itself. So we saw very significant changes on that second day, and the energy in the room started to really start to amplify. The third day, we decided that it would be a great way, once they found the sweet spot of the present moment, to really begin to create a future that they wanted and really move into a new state of being. And this is when the energy really started to amplify in the room, and we started to see very, very poignant and significant changes in people's well-being and in their health. The last day was about receiving, and what is it when we move into a state of receivership? What does that take? What are the emotions that allow us to do that? And they tend to be elevated emotions, so by using elevated emotions and experience a level of wholeness or a level of satisfaction, a level of completeness, that is really when, in that place, you're already connected to the event. And so that was when the energy in the room even went higher. So we put together that little program, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning till 7 or so at night, you know, every night. So it was long days, but pretty happy people.
But lots of people do transformational weekends, and it sort of sounds like a lot of what people are doing, but I would think, or it sounds like you're doing something a little different with these people as opposed to just being the observer of their thoughts or creating desires or visions of what they want to become. It sounds like you have a slightly different take on how to do that specifically. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the content that we provide is really based on the scientific model that's being developed, I think, in different universities and laboratories around the world. I mean, I think science is the contemporary language of mysticism. So understanding brain waves and how they work, understanding what happens when a person's living by more limited emotional states and more elevated emotional states, and combining that with really a greater understanding, I think that it's a time in history where people not only want to know, they want to know how. So that's really what we started doing, and I think, you know, giving people the time and the opportunity, really people do amazing things, and that's really been one of the things I learned from the whole process.
So by showing people that they are actually affecting their brain states by feedback, by they can actually get the positive reinforcements that will create even greater changes, is what you're saying.
Right, because, I mean, they weren't just feeling better or feeling well. They were better. They were well. There was evidence to show that their brains were changed. So feedback, there's three steps to transformation. You learn information. That begins to involve a cognitive process of the brain. We philosophically were beginning to stimulate different circuits in our brain. But then when you get instruction and you do something with that information, you got to get your body involved. And if you do that properly, you should have a new experience. Experience changes both the brain and the body. So once you have that instruction and there's a change, you can measure that change. The measurement of that change is called feedback. And what makes this so unique is that most people don't really see feedback when they're in transformation. They may feel a little bit better, but they don't see it reflected in their life. So if we can measure that transformation, and it's measured in forms of scientific feedback, they're going to pay attention to what they did, and they're going to do it again. They're going to do it better. They're going to do it over and over again. And that's how we begin to develop a skill. That's how we go from thinking to doing to being. That's how we begin to merge mind and body as one. That's the process.
Okay, so I'm interested in that first step. When you learn something new, then you can have a new experience. So what is it that people would learn new that would give them a new experience of who they are and the world?
Well, we do a lot of different things in our workshops, depending on what the content is related to. We're doing three meditations a day, and each meditation was designed a little differently for a person really to get beyond themselves. And when we get beyond ourselves, that's when we tend to be the most miraculous. So we demystify the understanding of the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. We use a working model to understand when you're there and when you're not. We begin to demystify meditation to understand that meditation really has everything to do with getting beyond the analytical mind. Mm-hmm. And that when we use our analytical mind to try to change something in our life, we only cause our brain to work harder and be moved more out of balance. So there are parameters that we set that people begin to really embrace. And, you know, if experiences produce emotions, and emotions are the signaling mechanisms from the environment, feedback from the environment, and it's the emotional quotient that signals the gene, is it possible then to signal the gene ahead of the environment? In other words, do you have to wait for the experience of wealth to feel wealthy? Do you have to be in love in order to with someone in order to feel love? Or can you signal the gene ahead of the actual experience? Because if you can, then the body as the unconscious mind begins to believe it's in the future event in the present moment. And that's when the brain and body are no longer anchored to the past. That's when they're liberated and free to move into a new future. So we talk about beliefs and perceptions and changing those and what that means and marrying clear intention with an elevated emotion and opening the heart and how heart coherence works with brain coherence. And the model just progresses. So,
Well, let's talk about heart coherence after I ask you this question about, which is, the old story. I think Jesus even said it, feel as if it is. So even before people are feeling better, they are actually producing the effort and actually sensing what it is to feel better. Is it something like that you're saying?
I don't want to totally agree with that, Alan, because I think there's a lot of knowledge that has to come along with it, because it's almost like a person then says, well, geez, I'm going to think positively, but if they've been feeling negatively for the last 35 years, that's mm-hmm. mind and body in opposition. And if they've been in the cycle of thinking and feeling that way, then their body has become the mind of negativity. Now the body is in opposition to the mind. And if 95% of who we are by the time we're 35 is a set of memorized behaviors and emotional reactions, beliefs and perceptions that run like a subconscious computer program, then a person who's using 5% of their mind to change 95% of what they've memorized usually is going to go unconscious the moment they walk back into their life and the environment causes them to think equal to everything they know. So it's a little bit more than that, but it's a good start in understanding the process. It really takes a step-by-step approach, and that's what I hope I provide for people more than anything else.
But if it's more than just positive thinking, and I know it is, then it's actually creating actions to have the experience of that. Could you just lay that a little more without, you know, giving us the whole course?
You know, to change is to be greater than your body, to be greater than your environment, and to be greater than time. And I think we have all the biological and neurological machinery to do that. Mm. And that if we're thinking equal to our environment, you know, seeing the same people going to the same places and doing the same things at the exact same time, then it's the external environment that's turning on different circuits in our brain to cause us to think equal to everything we know, to think the same way. Mm. And as long as we're thinking equal to everything that's the same, we're going to create more of the same in our life if we believe that our thoughts have something to do with our destiny. In other words, it's our external environment, it's our external, you know, reality, our personal reality that's creating our personal reality. It's our personal external environment that's creating who we are as a personality. But the model of quantum says your personality actually creates your personal reality. So can you change how you think, act, and feel so that you can be greater than the conditions in your environment? In other words, your brain is no longer a set of circuits that are, you know, past memories up until this moment, but you begin to install the circuits in your brain to look like the experience has happened and emotionally embrace future events before they occur so that the body begins to automatically begin to respond. Because the moment we open up with an elevated emotion, we activate the autonomic nervous system. That's where the limbic brain exists. That's the emotional center. And that begins to open the door to begin to arouse a series of pharmaceuticals in our body that really match our mind. So now we're beginning to plant a seed in that autonomic system, and then it does the healing just because it's already functioning and giving us life at this point. So when the brain and body are no longer living in the past, but they're emotionally in the future and neurologically in the future. In other words, the brain looks like the event has happened. The body looks like it's already experienced the event and it's signaled genetically. Now we're in a new state of being. And a new state of being is a new personality. So giving people the tools and the opportunity to understand that in their meditative process that they have to get beyond their body, their environment, and time. They have to become nobody, no one, no thing, nowhere, no time. That moment of being becoming pure consciousness is when the body is liberated from the past. And that moment of freedom, that liberation of energy, is called joy. That's when we go from particle to wave. That's when we begin to open our hearts. That's when the survival centers begin to shut off. That's when the brain starts making these wonderful chemicals related to oxytocin that begins to shut down the amygdala, where all of its neurosis exists with fear and sadness and aggression. And we begin to become selfless. We go from selfish to selfless. Now, I call that the natural state of being. And I say that that's a skill. The more you practice it, the better you get at it. So our advanced students, when they come to a workshop, they're already primed to understand what they're doing. And so we set a model, whatever that model is, based on whatever information I provide to them. There's information that's given to them. They wire that information in their brain. They understand the process. There's an activity that they do in a meditation to unify to a collective understanding. And then we may repeat it one or two times, or we may build on it from the last time. And so it's pretty cool, because I never really thought that I would be measuring transformation to the point that we are. But I think we're only as good as our laboratory experimentees, and we have some pretty wonderful people doing some really amazing things.
Well, I think the more you elevate the consciousness of the people, more is possible. And it's a multiple progression of unfoldment. And then the field sort of starts to hit the human consciousness in general to elevate the population. So, I mean,
well, we saw it. You know, there's a concept in biology that I'm fascinated with. It's called emergence. And we just did another advanced workshop in July in Colorado with, I don't know how many people were there, but there were quite a few people there, maybe 250 or 280 people there. And another advanced workshop, we brought in the neuroscientists again. We brought in HeartMath Institute. We brought in the GDV measurements from Russia. And we put a bunch of people through a lot of those tests again. And when we did the advanced workshop this last time, we saw brainwave patterns that were pretty much historical. In other words, the type of changes that were taking place in certain people, the machine couldn't calibrate because it was such significant amplitude. Now, that's making history, but the cool part about it is that these people weren't Buddhist monks, or they weren't, you know, experienced meditators or academics doing research. They were common people like you and I. And when you study emergence, the funny thing about emergence is that, you know, in most species, when you look at a group of fish, a school of fish all swimming the same way, or birds all in a pattern, or even neurons when they begin to signal in patterns like that, you would think that in studying those birds or fish that do what they do, that it's a top-down phenomenon. In other words, there's a leader that's leading and everybody's following the leader.
Wow.
Turns out, though, when you study this concept, it's actually a bottom-up phenomenon. There is no leader. It's a collective consciousness where a group of organisms, in timing and coherence and in rhythm, are all behaving in the same way. Now, I love that idea, because when you have an emergence of consciousness, when you have an emergence of individuals that are breaking free from the genetic proclivities and predispositions and conditioning that we've been has been so embedded into us, and people are starting to experience a certain level of freedom and a certain level of joy and a certain level of, you know, emotional expression, and their heart is opening. The emergence of that consciousness is a collective consciousness, and people are acting in the same way because they share a unified field. And the stigma in history has always been, you know, the leader gets it. Charismatic leader always is assassinated, whether it's Gandhi or Martin Luther King or John F. Kennedy or Joan of Arc. You know, everybody gets it in the end. So there's an unconscious stigma in our brain about leadership. You know, don't lead too much because you could lose your life. Right. But in a world that's changing like this, the only way that the world will actually change is in the level of emergence, where enough individuals are leading, and there's a collective community that's emerging. There's a culture that's consuming the present community, and it's everybody acting in new ways, and that's what begins to give people permission to do the same in their lives, and that's my hope.
Well, does that eventually reach a critical mass and affects the morphogenetic field, if you want to call it, of humanity itself? Do you see that as a possibility?
Well, morphogenesis is really about imprinting information into an accessible field. Either it's Jung or Sheldrake or whoever. Basically, it's a collective consciousness where everybody's drawing information from an invisible field of intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so, if you and I are accessing and tapping into that field and people are doing it and that information is more readily available, I think that people will begin to break free from, you know, the model of selfishness and competition and greed and deception and all those other things that really have defined society and humanity, that we're at a point now where if there's enough people experiencing, just say, physical health just by changing their thought alone, and you understand even the mechanisms of the placebo, you would have to agree then that if that became a skill and you taught people how to do it, just like the 4-minute mile, if there's enough of people actually embracing that, because in an age of information, you know, ignorance is a choice. So now we have a lot of information. Well, what are we going to do with it? So I think that it happens morphogenically because we're putting information into the field. But I also think it happens really by demonstration. If everybody is, I was in Spain just a little ways back, and the government has 17 ministries, and they asked me to come and speak about the crisis in Spain. First thing I asked them is, how are you contributing to the crisis? The second thing I said was, well, gosh darn it, in moments where there is crisis and there's not enough, you have to do what's unnatural. You have to give when everybody else is in lack. That's unnatural. You have to really show compassion when everybody else is judging. You have to stay calm when there's chaos. That's unnatural. That's how we lead to becoming supernatural. So that's not something you talk about. You have to execute it, and you have to demonstrate it. And so if I see you demonstrating compassion, you're more prone to be compassionate, and you're more prone to try it out yourself. Why? Because mirror neurons, empathy neurons, once you observe it, once you see it done, you turn on the same circuits in your brain as if you're actually doing it. And your observation, that kind of modeling, begins to prime the brain to do the same. But if you see people living in war, and you see people in fear, and you see that enough times in the news, then that becomes the unconscious priming that keeps everybody stuck in very limited ways.
But we are moving to, it seems like we are moving to a critical mass where enough people are starting to think the way you've been talking about, and people like Lynn McTaggart, Deepak Chopra. I mean, there's a whole bunch. I mean, there's a quantum medicine conference coming up that I know you're a part of in Hawaii. All these people are putting together a similar sort of idea, and I think there's going to reach a critical mass, and that maybe that's where, boom, the population gets it. They get living in the present. They get opening their heart. They get, you know, compassion and empathy. That's my hope. Do you see something like that?
Well, I do. I think it's more relevant than it's ever been before. I think that if I think back in 1999 to, say, present, and I think about the exponential change that's taking place in global consciousness, and because of globalization, you know, whether I'm in Istanbul or Hong Kong or Tokyo or Alberta, Canada, or even Mexico City, everybody is waking up to those understandings. I think that there's And I don't even believe in good and evil, but there is a very strong element where there's also a cascade of craziness happening on the planet right now. And that, you know, I think that there is a critical mass that has to be reached, that all of us have to, you know, embrace. And my point I was making is that it's just not enough to think that way. We have to demonstrate it. We have to, you know, we have to move into different states of being and then maintain those states so that we're doing something that's that everybody else isn't doing, so that other people start to catch on to it. So yes, I do think it's there's a collective shift.
But it's about doing and demonstrating. Yeah. Okay. I get that. So what is then heart coherence you talked about?
Well, we when we studied our subjects in our February advanced retreat, and we saw all those biological changes taking place in their brain, the element of coherence is such an amazing thing, because coherence is when there's a rhythm, there's a harmony, there's a harmonic, there's a synchronization that takes place in the brain, and the fractured elements of the brain begin to unify, and different parts of the brain start to talk to each other, and what syncs together links together in the brain, so a person starts to experience more of their own wholeness, and we saw this in our February event. We saw several people in real time, all of a sudden their brain just come online, and the front is talking to the back, and one side's talking to the other, and we know that this person is about ready to go into ecstasy, because that kind of orderliness is so transcendent of words. It's a very strong emotion. And what happened was, a lot of people, when they experienced the unification of a psychic union of two hemispheres in the brain, their heart naturally opened. That's what love is, the unification of polarity. So when we saw this in enough people, and then we saw it not happening in certain other people, we came to the conclusion that what begins to amplify or drive brain coherence is heart coherence. And that is, if you begin to open your heart, that begins to expedite the process, and it creates more robust coherence in the brain. So we brought in HeartMath. I spent quite a bit of time talking to their senior research analyst, Roland McCrady, and we did, I think it was about 80 people or 60 people or so that wore a heart rate monitor on their heart for 24 hours, and then we would switch to the next group of people. And we, of course, wanted to see what was happening in terms of heart coherence. Now, I always say you can't have brain coherence without heart coherence. You can't have heart coherence without brain coherence, that it's a function of the brain working together with the body. And when you get out of those stressful hormonal states of survival, that we're more prone to act in divine ways. And so we brought in the HeartMath team because it was just more information. And we're consolidating all the data from the July event these next couple weeks. I actually have a meeting today with one of the neuroscientists to discuss some of the findings. So, again, I just think that I would love to measure epigenetic changes also. I would love to study people for 4 days changing their state of being, and let's see in 4 days if the new genes are signaled in any new ways, and certain genes, the stress hormones are shut down, and what it looks like on a cellular and proteolytic level. So those are things that I just find really fun and exciting. And the people that participate in it are very selfless. They're very giving. And in the event in July, we had people doing some pretty spectacular and amazing things. And we were lucky enough to capture that in real time. So we'll write some articles and papers on it.
Well, like what? I mean, what's some of the most spectacular gene transformation you've seen in your work? I mean, if you don't mind sharing.
Well, we've,
what's the most exciting?
Well, we had people that had cancer, tumors in their brain and tumors in their chest, like behind their mediastinum, have an experience in meditation and it go away. I mean, they went to their doctor and had their brain scanned and their chest scanned, and the tumor was no longer there. And and they had a transcendent experience where energy began to leave their body and move into their brain. And when that happened, we knew in that moment that the person was producing very significant what's called gamma wave patterns in their brain. They were in a superconscious state. And we knew that what was going on with them, they would never forget for the rest of their life, because that's what gamma does. It's a very, very profound experience, and you can measure that. And so when we saw that happening in a few individuals in real time, and they went and had their, they explained the transformation, and it was as real as anything else, and they went and had their tests, we can correlate reduction in cancer cells or the absence of the tumor with what was happening physiologically in their brain. We saw a woman just in July who she had uterine fibroids, and she would bleed about 2 quarts of blood when she had her period. Well, she was one of the first people that we scanned that day on our first day, and she was very nervous about her participation, because if she laid down after her meditation, she didn't. She usually put on like a diaper, because the blood was so, she would lose a liter of blood. She was so worried about it. But when she went into her meditation, we saw the same exact pattern happen. We saw energy leave her body and move into her brain, and we saw very high levels of gamma, like you would see in a kundalini. But very, very, global in the brain. It was happening in many areas all at once. And we saw what was involuntarily happening to her body. And we didn't know she had uterine fibroids or that she bled. But she took the mic the next day and she said, "Look, I've had this condition for my last, 20 years. It's always 2 liters of blood or more. I was embarrassed that I was in this study, and I thought if I laid down, I was going to leave a mess, and I just had the most amazing moment in my meditation, and I felt like something shifted in me, and I feel better." And she said, it's my third day, and I haven't bled just a few drops, and I feel much better, and there's been a very significant change for me." So we've seen enough of those go on now that we had a lady come in with a walker in July and left without it, which was pretty cool, too. We've seen people with, traumatic brain injuries that had certain paralysis in certain parts of their body have a reversal. So we've seen quite a few really important changes for people, and we've been lucky enough on a lot of those people to actually have their brains scans in both in real time and before and after. So that's the information that we're correlating with the transformation.
It's incredible that the transformation physically is correlated to a kind of transcendental state of consciousness. That's an interesting and valuable correlation, I think. I mean,
It's pretty exciting, and people are doing it, and that's the cool part about it. I think that's really what makes it pretty exciting, and it's no serious, heavy process. Our people are pretty excited. They're full of life. We had live music at this last one. We brought in Barry Goldstein, and he did all of the music live under my instructions. So we were composing music on the spot, and it was really pretty pretty impromptu, but at the same time really exciting, because the music really moved everybody. So we're always building, we're always adding to it, but our folks are passionate individuals that really are interested in transformation.
Well, there's another weekend coming up, September, 13th, 14th, and 15th in Norwalk, Connecticut, people can participate in. And that'll be exciting for anyone who comes, right? Or is that just a, you have to do something?
Yeah, we do these progressive workshops, and anybody who does a progressive workshop we invite them to see the online intensive workshop on the internet from our website, so that they have the basic understanding. And then when they come to the progressive workshop, say in Norwalk in September, it's a Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. It's a pretty full weekend. It's not a lot, you know, we're not sitting around talking. You're in and out of meditation all weekend long, with very specific intention behind it. And it's an opportunity for people to retreat from their life just for a few days so that they can begin to change their brain and body to be ahead of their environment, so that when we turn back into their life, they're not the same person. So we've done enough progressive workshops to know that people get it. And if you've done the progressive workshop, then you're automatically eligible for some of the for the advancing workshop and join the group that's doing all the scientific testing, and if you come, you know, you're invited to participate in the testing. So we'll be in Norwalk on the 13th, 14th, and 15th, I think it is.
Yes, it is September 13th, 14th. And what's your website again?
It's drjoedispenza.com, DrJoeDispenza.
One last question I'd like to just put out there. Your workshops are sort of about envisioning what people would, you know, the states and the kind of higher energy states they would like to become. But what about going into the unknown with no pre-idea? I mean, being present, but going into a space where you don't know what the future will bring you as far, and I think you talked about that in creating your day, but how do you measure that or go for the unknown as opposed to the known?
Well, we do a lot of that, Alan, actually, because my passion is really experiencing the unknown. So we have certain meditations where we train people to understand that if you have the majority, where you place your attention is where you place your energy. So if you place your attention on your problems, you place your attention on the people in your life and the conditions in your world, and you place your attention on all the elements in your external environment, your Facebook, your emails, your cell phone, your text, then most people divide their attention because now their attention is all on their external world. So their energy is displaced all over their external environment. So when you teach people how to become aware of where their attention is, and they begin to disassociate from their body, when they begin to dissociate from all the conditions in their environment, and they get to the point where they transcend time, if you teach them that the longer you invest your attention into the unknown, the more you become aware that you're a consciousness in possibility, the more you draw possibility to you. And if you find your mind as the quantum observer, returning back to the familiar, to the known, to the same people, same things, then you as the observer are collapsing infinite waves of possibility into the same patterns of information called your life. So when we get people working, and we do this, by the way, in the progressive workshop, we train people to invest their energy in the unknown so that the unknown and the new opportunities can show up in their life. And that's one of the fun things, because one of the things we realize is when people get to this point, it's really a funny thing when you see it on the brain scan, because the moment the person gets to this point, the brain says, oh my God, she's finally out of the way, he's finally out of the way. And the brain naturally recalibrates itself. It becomes more orderly. The moment we're out of the way, it begins to heal. So there's a lot of phenomenon that happen as a result of becoming that, and we've been able to measure it.
So the more coherence, the more in touch in the moment, the more the universe gives us more of the unknown, because it's beyond what we have known, which has been in the way.
Right. You can't create the unknown from the known. You have to get to the place where you're comfortable in that void of nothing, and that's the perfect place to create from. So getting there is a little bit of a challenge, but we have techniques that actually have been been studied, and we now know, according to our work, that you can teach people how to get there pretty quickly, and when you do, they get better at it.
Well, thank you, Joe. It's very exciting what you're doing, and I'm happy you're coming back to New York September 12th at One Spirit Learning Alliance. That's 247 West 36th Street. You can look on my website, newrealities.com, and get a ticket there. And any final words you would like to say before I see you next week?
Well, I invite everybody to come and meet me. I mean, I love what everybody's doing in the world right now, and I'm humbled by the opportunity to contribute, and I think it's a time in history where it's not enough to know, it's a time in history to know how, and I think that's what people are really craving.
Thanks. Yes, exactly. So I look forward to seeing you and all the new stuff you're working on, and it's very exciting. This is really cutting-edge human technology. So thanks again, Joe.
Thank you, Alan, for having me on your show.
Of course, always, anytime, anytime. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to newrealities.com or email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening tonight. See you.